Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Drake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Oh, yeah.
Can't see me. Can't see me. Welcome, America, to another great addition to Talking Sports with the 12th man. We are without our brother, JQ. He's still under the weather, but that's okay. We're going to let him relax, recoup, and he will be ready to go next week. I know that Gary called him to go to the podcast, so hopefully the goal will be good. We'll be ready to go next week, and we'll get everything back to normal, too. So, that way, Gary doesn't have to strip, you know, again, to keep the ratings up. So we're just happy that we're able to make this week work for sure. So
Don't do it, Gary.
Great deal. So let's get this party started. We have a lot of things to discuss. Yay, some reports from the NFL, a couple things happening, some college football. But without further ado, we always like to check in with the crew. So Mr. Rob Ford, I'll kick it off with you, my guy. How you feeling this evening?
Man, feeling great, man. Feeling like a champ. Got that asparagus in me tonight. It's always good, you know. Had some good Indian cuisine last night. That's always good. Hey, God is good, man. Blessed to be on another show with you guys.
All the time. Yeah, that's good stuff, man. We're happy that, you know, for your insides, for going for the asparagus, man. So, again, we're just hoping and praying that you're going to be okay, man. So, again, good stuff.
Oh,
without
yeah.
further ado, Gary, where are you at, my guy? Are you good? Are you back home? You know, you've been on the road.
I'm home for I don't know for how long. Maybe just a few days.
Okay.
Had to come home, take care of some business. I'm still handling Curtis's estate, and it's you know, in probate, and I'm handling that, so I had to come home and do a few things with that. But we're already chomping at the bit to get on the road again, and we're enjoying that, enjoying the life.
Enjoying that
retirement.
You had
an offer or something on your house or something like that, or something? Is that what the...
Yeah, we had one offer on the house. It was low. The people really wanted it. They just didn't qualify for quite enough.
Okay.
I wish I would have been in a position where I could have just accepted their offer. I wish they would have been able to have some sort of creative financing, but it was just too big of a gap.
Gotcha. Fair enough.
Business is business.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, like I said, again, we'll see how that plays out. Maybe we'll get another offer, and who knows? You know, like I said, retirement's like a treat you well, man, so all good. So without further ado, gentlemen, we got a lot of things to discuss. Let's throw out the numbers to everyone that wants to reach out to your boys. The number we always call is the same as always, the 424-243-9519. Follow us on Twitter, which is the handle at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And last but not least, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/talkingsports. The 12th Man or 12th Man Sports, you will find us in that arena as well. I know Rob always posts some mock drafts on there. Looks like we posted the NBA mock draft an hour ago, so thank you, Rob, for that as well. I post show topics, one thing like that, too. So we keep it going, as always. But without further ado, gentlemen, let's jump right into the one topic that, you know, it's pretty shocking. And I will say, you know, most Warrior fans are not a fan of Draymond Green at this juncture. So, you know, at first it was cute, but then it's like, man, come on, bro. you know, there's situations where he is seeking x-rays after stomping on Sabonis' chest, and, you know, he claims that Sabonis is holding on to his ankle, and that's kind of why he did that. But clearly in the replays, you know, that there's nothing about that, and Draymond's just, you know, dirty player.
No, I disagree with you on that one.
You do. Okay.
I absolutely do. You know, I was watching the replay. You know, Sabonis did grab his foot. Okay, so he is stepping. Yes, he stepped on him, but I don't think he came down with any. And I'm not a Golden State fan. You know, they've been in the thorns of the sides of all the teams out here in the West, and I like the fact that they're down 0-2. I'm digging all that. But at the same time, I don't think that – I mean, he did go up and step on that guy, but that's the way he was kind of going when Sabonis grabbed his foot. And I don't think he came down with any real intent to stomp on the guy myself. I watched it over and over again.
Really?
Okay. And another thing, you know, for these Golden State Warrior fans – you know, you needed that guy to win your championships. No, he wasn't the MVP, but at least two of those, he was in the thorn of the side of whatever team they were going against best player. And he made their bigs and their forwards, whoever that was that good dominant player, he frustrated the hell out of them. And they wouldn't have won at least two of those championships without him, in my opinion. He's one of those guys that he's not a 30-point guy. He's not a 20-rebound guy, but he does the right things a lot of times at the right times. He plays with fire. He plays with intensity. And he'll back up every single player on his team. He'll get in front of a situation instead of stand back like you see some players just stand back and wait for the brouhaha or whatever to get over. No, he's right up there defending his team. And so, you know, he's one of those guys that every team wishes they had a guy like that. And I made a comment to you guys in the text message. That's the kind of player that I wish the Blazers had. That's the kind of player Dennis Rodman was. Now, I'm not saying he's not the rebounder and all that stuff, but he does a lot of the similar things that Dennis does. You know, he frustrates people, takes people out of their game, and which makes their team run even better.
Yeah, and I agree with Gary. You know, he's definitely been a very integral part of their team and the franchise for quite some time, especially with the first couple of championships. He definitely had. I think last year they won in spite of him. I didn't think he was very good in the finals last year. Against Boston, except for the last game. But I think they won in spite of him on last year, and I would be shocked to see Golden State give him a huge contract extension. I think he's a free agent this offseason. Am I correct, Andre? Yeah.
He's correct, yeah.
I think the focus is going to be on keeping Klay Thompson, and you know, if unless he gives him a hometown discount, he probably won't be back with Golden State, you know, going forward. And I agree. I don't think he should be suspended for what happened on, you know, after watching that, you know, Sabonis did grab his leg. I think he maybe used a little bit more force on the stump than what Gary is saying. But I think, I think another thing that kind of frustrated me with him on last night, more so than the stump, was the way he was arguing with the fans. And you know, I think the NBA, you know, it may look at that, you know, that piece of it as well. But I don't think he deserves to be suspended. But I think, like I said, the stump was frustrating. But I think the way he got into it with the fans was even more frustrating for me.
I mean, there's some good points on both sides. I mean, I definitely think he's the cause of there's some pluses and minuses. There's things he's added, but, you know, him calling Durant a little bitch, you know, wasn't good because he's the main reason why Durant left. And then, you know, him hitting, you know, getting to a fight with teammates. There's some good and bad with that, right? You know, I get
he was
competitive with your teammates. So it's just, you have to kind of watch that. You want to talk about your emotional intelligence, right? You know, because, again, you talk about certain things, and that's who you are, either Mike Krzyzewski. I hate to, you know, I know everyone hates Duke here, but he had a good point. He's like, you know, either you can use somebody to, like Christian Laettner, he talked about him, either I can use him to burn the place down or I can use him to warm the building. So you have to kind of figure out the right motivation for a player. And Dennis Rodman was, that's a pretty good analogy too, because, you know, he definitely was getting into everyone's crawl. He was kind of the same player, but I don't think he was as, you know, dirty, I don't think, as Draymond
was.
Well, he was, but not to, now, that's a different era, right? There's things that we got away with back then that nowadays, like,
right.
A different type of situation, too. Because Bill Laimbeer got away with, like, a lot of, you know, clotheslining people, and you talk about that type of era of basketball, just it was different as far as the players. Like the Charles Oakleys, you know, the, you know, Xavier McDaniels, those type of players, they had a role as opposed to, you know, what we have now. So it's just a pretty fine line. And like I said, I think at this juncture, as Rob said, Golden State won in spite of Draymond, and that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, after a while, if you're kind of doing certain things in to your team, then I think it becomes more of a, hey, we got you. But now it's like it's that fine line, like, okay, Draymond, you know, you can't be hitting guys in the nuts and, you know, thinking, hey, this is okay, or little things like that, too. So it's just it's a pretty fine line, I would say, so. But like you said, every team needs a player that has that type of juncture to kind of get underneath the skin and just take technicals and just you know, go after that best player. And, it shows you how important the team basketball is.
Well, the luxury of having a player like that is, you know, Coach Kerr can, he knows, oh, don't worry about it. We got Draymond for him, you know.
Right.
You know, he's that guy. You don't have to worry about getting anybody up for him or whatever. He knows what always knows the weakness of his opponent. He's but sometimes he appears to be out of control and a little crazy at times, and he is. But he's also smart enough to pick apart somebody's weakness. And we've seen him do it over and over and over again. To different players on different teams. And that's the kind of guy, that is the kind of guy you want on your team. You want that guy that, now what Rob said was, you know, they won in spite of Draymond Green last year, except the final game, right? Isn't that what you said, Rob? What happened in the final game?
He finally had a good game.
Yeah. And he still did all the dirty stuff, you know. So that's what I'm saying. You know, everybody goes through their times, but that was in that particular series. But what we forget about when we get to the, you know, when we talk about Golden State is we forget about, you know, the first and the second round and all this to getting to the NBA Finals. And he's doing this stuff all along. He's taking whatever best team's person out of the game and making them, you know, and we all hate him when we're going up against him or your team's going up against him. But I'd like to see the Blazers pick him up.
Interesting. You may get your wish, man. So let's talk about the update on the series because we talk about, you know, one of my big things is that it's about matchups. Like certain teams are going to match up, you know, with certain teams in the playoffs, right? So in this instance, we have a Kings team that's been, you know, they've had one of the longest playoff droughts of like 16 years of what I was looking up. So they're just excited to be back. And this is like, man, back in the days of, you know, Chris Webber, Vlade Divac, you're going back, right? That's how far back it seems like it's been. And they used to be kind of a laughingstock, but for this year, they seem to put it together, you know. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox is playing fantastic. Kevin Herter, I mean, Malik Monk, we made fun of him, his brother, has been his agent. But they're pulling the right levers. And Mike Brown, again, the ironic thing, he was the ex-coach of Golden State, and just he kind of knows how to manipulate his team. And the first game was like, all right, you guys won by three. And this game was more or less like, okay, you know, the Kings are actually putting it to the Warriors, and it's about matchups, right? You know, so obviously Horford thought that's a bonus to how he's doing enough to do some things, and it's looking like, you know, right now the champs are against the ropes, but we'll see if they can pull it out. I don't think they're going to win the series. I don't think they can pull four away, but it's all about the matchups, I would say. They are the champs, but, you know, it's going to be tough.
Well, what I would say about that is watching that game last night, you know, the how many times did the Warriors have to take some either desperation shot or just run out of clock time? Because they had guys out there on the perimeter, and the way they were switching and then switching back on, you know, on Steph was really, they did an exceptional job.
They threw a lot of guys.
I thought they were going to win one out of the two games and make a respectable series out of it. But when you go down 0-2, the one team I know that can do that, and, you know, is these guys in Golden State. They could go back and make you completely forget about these first two games. But I'll tell you what, I was impressed. I was impressed with Sacramento and how they played this game and how hard they fought. They got a way better team than what I thought they did.
And you got to give Mike Brown a lot of credit, too. And obviously, he was an assistant coach with this Golden State team for a long time. So I think he knows what their philosophies are and their strengths and what their weaknesses are. And you better believe that he's using that to his advantage from a coaching standpoint in this series. And this Sacramento team has talent. There's no question about it. You know, De'Aaron Fox, I've watched him for the last few years. You know, every time I've seen him play against the Pelicans, he, even though we beat him a lot, he was still a heck of a player. And then Sabonis, you know, for them to add him to this situation, there was a huge win. Malik Monk, Davion Mitchell, when they drafted him, he drafted an elite defender coming out of college. I mean, we watched him at Baylor win a national championship, and he's an elite on-the-ball defender. And so, I mean, they definitely put together some great pieces. Harrison Barnes was always a solid player, so they definitely have some talent. Yeah. Keegan Murray, who hasn't been a huge factor in this series, but he's had a great season this year as a rookie from Iowa. So they have the pieces there. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be hard for any team to come back from 2-0, but you never count out the Golden State Warriors and a four-time champion. And so it's going to be interesting to see. Sacramento they were very good this year on the road. So we'll see how well they play in San Francisco. Golden State's been very good at home, not so good on the road this year. But Sacramento is one of the better road teams in the NBA this year, surprisingly for a young team. So we'll see how that shakes out when they go back to San Francisco.
Good stuff. I mentioned all that Mike Brown, the ex-coach, and like I said, you know, Curry's getting up there. He's getting older. So eventually you can't keep pulling these shots off, and eventually he's going to have some help at some point. And, you know, they are the champs, but you got the young bucks there. They're on the cusp of trying to figure this out for sure, man. So we'll see how it plays out.
Defensively, Golden State is not as good as they've been in the past. And
correct.
So that's something that I'm sorry, I got sidetracked here. But, yeah, defensively, Golden State has not been as good as they've been in the past. And that's showing up here in these first two games. And Sacramento, on the other hand, has been playing outstanding defense, as, you know, Gary alluded to already. So, to me, that's the big drop-off of Golden State. All that being said, at the end of game one, Steph Curry had a heck of a look to tie that game up. I mean, he had a great look, but he just missed the shot. And so his percentage from the three-point range has not been great so far. Let's see, you know, if he's able to get it back. Going back home.
Well, and that's what kind of scares me in this series is I believe they are going to get it going back home. That's their MO. And especially with the Splash Brothers, those two guys. they're going to get it going. And what Sacramento has to do is just not worry about matching them three for threes, but just play their game, take them when they've got them, and hit them, because they didn't hit from threes very good the other night. So they're going to have to do better than that, but not try and match those guys three for three. Just play D, stretch out the clock on them, have them take a bad three-point shot instead of some of the shots that they just missed, in this last game.
Yeah, they're definitely going to try to come out hot and try to just follow the momentum of the crowd and just kind of get a nice little lead going up too. So if Sacramento can withstand that, we'll see how that plays out for sure in the series. Let's talk about predictions for the first team all NBA, Rob.
Well, the actual official first team did come out today, but my first team all NBA is slightly different than what came out today. So I'm going to go with my forwards, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jason Tatum. Those are the no-brainer, and that's what were the two forwards on the official first-team All-NBA that came out today. But I'm going Joel Embiid at center over Nikola Jokic, who actually got the NBA's All-First Team. I just like the way Embiid has played this year, on the defensive end, the offensive end. I think that's the difference. I think they're both extremely talented from an offensive standpoint, good rebounders, but I thought Embiid was a better defender than Jokic this year. So I'm going to give the slight edge to Embiid, and so I have him at center. My guards are definitely different than who was on the first-team All-NBA. My first-team All-NBA guards are Donovan Mitchell and De'Aaron Fox. Mitchell had a phenomenal year scoring a basketball, and De'Aaron Fox was an elite guard this year. They had Steph Curry on there. I thought Steph missed a lot of games this year, and I would not have put him on the first-team All-NBA. And I can't even remember who the other first-team All-NBA guard was. But I didn't agree with the two selections. I think Luka Doncic was the other first-team All-NBA.
Shai
Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah,
from Oklahoma City, yeah. Yeah, his team.
Oh, Oklahoma City, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I went with De'Aaron Fox and Donovan Mitchell as my two guards for first-team All-NBA, if I had a vote.
Well, you have a vote here. And he's definitely up there. I wouldn't have put Curry in there for the same reason. I probably would have put Luka in there instead of Curry. But other than that,
yeah.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the Joker there. Between the Joker and Embiid, it could be either way. I can definitely see your point, and I can definitely see the NBA's point with the Joker. They're just, like we were going over their stats last week, and, those three guys, Giannis, the Joker, and Joel, their stats we were talking about for MVP were just crazy close. So, but I'm okay with what the NBA did.
I mean, it's tough, you talk about, Joker, he's just great all around. So, I mean, like I said, I agree with that, he's always flirting with triple doubles, just his court vision, anything like that too. So that's probably why they gave him the slight nod. But, you can't, the way that Embiid's playing this year too, it's just he's definitely on an MVP level for sure. Let's talk about some mock draft, Rob.
All right, I haven't had a chance to post the NFL mock draft, but I did post the first NBA mock draft in quite some time, as we're in playoff range and college basketball season is over. I'll do the same thing. I'll go over the top 10, and then I'll go over our teams. Detroit Pistons with number one pick. Hey, Victor Wembanyama, the center from France. Everybody wants the number one pick. This is supposed to be a once in a lifetime. Well, not once in a lifetime, but maybe once in a generational type talent.
Yeah.
Supposed to be the biggest NBA prospect since LeBron James. So, I mean, the guy's 7 feet tall. He can shoot it. He can handle it. He can defend it. He can do it all. So everybody wants this kid. So he's definitely the number one pick. And the number two pick, Scoot Henderson, is not a slouch either. I mean, he's supposed to be another guy that's supposed to be a highly regarded 6'3 elite point guard, can handle it, can shoot it, can defend, a tremendous athlete, have him going to Houston. Brandon Miller, even with the off-the-court concern there, got him going 3 to San Antonio. Jairice Walker, power forward from Houston, got him going 4 to Charlotte. And Gary's Portland Trail Blazers, I got him taking Amen Thompson, point guard from Overtime Elite. This is another guy, he's an elite athlete, 6'7", can defend, got great handles. Even for that height, 6'7", he's got extreme explosiveness and quickness. The only thing he's got to continue to prove on is his shot, but there's no doubt he's a tremendous prospect. Have him going number 5 to the Trailblazers there. Number 6, Orlando, Keontae George, shooting guard from Baylor. Indiana, Nick Smith Jr., shooting guard from Arkansas. We saw him get hot in the NCAA tournament. Cam Whitmore, small forward from Villanova. I got him going 8 to Washington. Isaiah Thompson, who's Amen Thompson's brother, small forward from Overtime Elite to Utah. And Grady Dick, small forward from Kansas, who had a great freshman year. Got him going to Dallas. Tremendous shooting, small forward and athlete. And they got him going to Dallas there at the number 10 spot. The remaining picks for Portland. Portland's got 2 first-round picks. And that second first-round pick, I got him taking Kyle Filipkowski from Duke. The 7-footer, he hasn't officially declared for the draft, so this could easily change. He's got average 15.9 rebounds. He's a 7-footer that's a stretch center who can step out and hit 3-pointers as well. So he was Duke's best player this past season as a freshman. And then Portland in the second round having taken Ricky Council IV, 6'6 shooting guard from Arkansas, talented scorer. He improved his 3-point shot throughout the year as well. The Pels, when he got 1 pick, we got a first-round pick, and I got us picking Keegan Murray's brother, Chris Murray from Iowa. Tremendous 3-point shooter at the power forward position. He had a big year for Iowa this past year, averaging over 20 points per game, 8 rebounds as well. And then the Hawks, I got the Hawks taking in the first round, Jalen Hood-Scafino, 6'6 point guard from Indiana, big tough guard. Talented passer. He's got a nice mid-range game as well. You like his size at the point guard position, similar to Amen Thompson, who I had going to the Blazers at 6'7". Then the second round, I got the Hawks taking Brandon Podziemski. He's a shooting guard from Santa Clara. Might be the best shooter in the draft. Now, there's some other areas of his game that he'll have to improve on, be 6'6", but as far as shooting the basketball, a guy that come off the bench and get buckets for you, he might be the best shooter in the draft, Santa Clara.
There's no Jason Tatum clones out there, are there? Man, Lord have mercy. We need like a 6'10 guy that can like just shoot, man. Here's something crazy like that. Jason Tatum was like killing us, but. I was looking at Anthony Blackman. After that, I was really curious how you had him going too. But yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Well, Anthony Black, point guard from Arkansas. I have him going number 12. I got him going 12,
yeah.
Oklahoma City, slightly before the Hawks pick. Yeah, but he's another big
point
guard, 6'7".
Yeah,
he got a lot of big point guards in his draft. A lot of Penny Hardaway type point guards in his draft at 6'7", lean, quick. So you got those. You got a lot of those type point guards in this draft.
What's up, Naj? Naj is on, by the way. Did you pop on, Naj? What's going on, my guy?
Oh, I ain't nothing, man. What's going on, y'all?
We're just welcoming you here.
Great.
We're just going through some NBA mock draft stuff. But like you said, if you want to join in, we're just kind of talking about what happened. I'm sure you can get some insight about Draymond, all that fun stuff, too. And then we're going to talk about the recapping, what's happening, the the Hawks and the Celtics and all that fun stuff too, but that is clearly where we are. If you want to add anything right now, my guy.
Nothing, man. Good list. Yeah, Wembanyama. I think we all saw the step back three, miss, and then tip dunk his own attempt. Like, yeah, that's a done deal, man. He is who he is. And Scoot, who I saw last year and immediately knew he was a lottery pick, like, yeah, he's the real deal too. Everything else, I'm going to wait till draft week to kind of run through some videos and check guys out. But, yeah, man, good list. I'm with it.
Yeah, Brandon Miller, we were kind of curious to see how he was going to develop too because, you know, like you said, Rob, those are a couple players that we were looking at. You know, I like how you got Grady Dick going pretty high, and then, you know, obviously you've got the Casey Wallace too. So this is a pretty interesting draft as far as that. But like you said, a lot of big point guards. I'm curious, like we talked about, to see who the best shooter is, and we need some bigs, you know. So that's kind of what's going to happen. But if you're the number one pick, damn, Victor, that's the dude, man. So I know San Antonio is, like, praying right now. I'm making Kip tattoo, but we'll see if there's a frozen envelope somewhere as well to see what happens with that because, Lord have mercy, you know what the NBA is trying to do with that. But appreciate you putting the mock draft on the page, Rob, as always. And let's move forward here. Let's talk about I think I mentioned this earlier.
We need Victor Wembanyama to go to the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah, that's right. Let's talk about Miami and Baylor losing their stars in the NBA. So go ahead, Rob, with that one.
Yeah, so both Miami and Baylor, huge blows. Miami lost its top scorer, Isaiah Wong. He declared for the draft, and Baylor losing Adam Flagler. So now Baylor is losing his top three scorers in this past year. I think Miami will still be a top 15 team. Baylor may drop out of the top 15 with losing Flagler. But the interesting part is I don't have neither one of these guys getting drafted. I think they're so I don't even think they're top 58 prospects. I think they're somewhere in the 70 to 75 range. So they probably should have stayed in school. Maybe they can work themselves into the draft, you know, by performing at a high level at the combine. But as of today, I don't have either one of these guys getting drafted. So really interesting decisions for both prospects.
Yeah.
So what would you do in that case if you were that stuff? Would you try and make one of these D-League teams and work with these NBA-style coaches and that sort of thing? Or would you say, oops, my bad, and go back to school? Or what would you do at that point?
Well,
you don't hire an agent, probably.
To my knowledge, they're signing with agents, but if they don't, they can go back to school. But once you sign with an agent, you're done. You can't come back to school. Now, we've seen some prospects like this go through the process. They don't get drafted, and they still have a career in the NBA. You look at the kid Wofford for your Portland Trailblazers, Gary, played at LSU.
Yeah.
He left after his sophomore year, and he didn't get drafted. And another one I was scratching my head. Okay, he's a nice player. But he's probably a fringe player, maybe not going to get drafted, probably should have stayed, but he's still having a nice NBA career so far early in his career. I mean, not a superstar or anything, but he'll probably be around for a good 9, 10, 11 years. So these guys, I mean, they probably will eventually make themselves on the NBA roster, but I say try to work your way up and try to get some of that guaranteed money before you hit the draft.
Yeah.
There's a danger to that with the NBA, though, because when you're not a priority guy who they drafted, man, you're subject to anything that could happen, whether it's a trade where they need certain money to match or they're just trying to figure out rotations or they're giving somebody else minutes that you probably should get, but since they spent the draft pick on them, they're going to see, they want to know for sure if the guy's got it or not. And then just the flip side of this, which I'm kind of finding interesting, is the women have a clear incentive to go back because the NIL deals are so much sweeter than the WNBA is. And then on the men's side, it looks like it's flipped where it's like the NIL deals are good, but the NBA money or even overseas money is so good that I guess these guys are just jumping out the window. Because I'm with him. When I heard those names, I was like, man, they really putting their name in? That's wild. But that's all I got.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, good call. The NBA, the WNBA draft was going on too. So, I mean, not that we were paying attention to that too, but, you know, that's just another situation for the NIL deals for sure. I'm talking about, let's do a quick recap, man, because my heart was hurt. Not that it was, like, unexpected, but just, you know, the Hawks and the Celtics, you know, the Celtics are one of the best teams, so we knew this was going to be a pretty tough challenge for the Hawks, and I'm just happy they just kept fighting. And obviously, the length of the Celtics is becoming a problem. Then you got Derek White just doing his thing right now. And you talk about some
– he's an underrated player.
So he was undrafted. For him to kind of do what he's been doing as well, playing well. Obviously, you got the Marcus Smarts of the world, hitting clutch threes. Al Horford, you know, whatever you want to call about him, and then just Robert. So they've got a pretty good team as far as that too. And I guess, you know, like I said, this is going to be interesting, a very, very interesting offseason for the Hawks because, you know, it does appear that we kind of hit, you know, kind of fool's gold whenever we had that little run. And I don't know, just I'm not saying that, you know, we got to get rid of trading like that, but it's just the way the team is constructed right now, it's there's some missing pieces. We added Mike Bray. I'm looking forward to adding Mike Bray because it's interesting because you had somebody that had a really good record in college, right? He was, like, the winningest coach in, like, Notre Dame history, you know. I think I said he's been to, like, 13 NCAA appearances and back-to-back Elite Eights and all this fun stuff. So he brings a different set of eyes, I think, to the NBA. He hasn't coached in the NBA before, but I think it's good for him. He's on Quinn Snyder. So this is going to be an interesting situation to have somebody that may add some things to the coaching staff and what to kind of look for. But, you know, I'm not expecting the Hawks to pull this off. But I just hope they play well, you know, maybe get one win or just call it, you know, just don't go down swinging, I would always say. So, but it's about matchups in this instance, too. And right now, the Celtics, they are one of the best teams in the East. So this is going to be we'll see. They're the runner-up last year for obviously losing to the Warriors. But, you know, they're on a mission for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the Celtics are my pick out of the East to go to the finals. Even before Giannis got hurt here, I picked it them to go to the finals, even as the two seed. And, I mean, Tatum and Jaylen Brown, that tandem on the wing is just deadly. And then not only in the offensive end, but they bring it on the defensive end. You mentioned Marcus Smart, Derek White, Brogdon coming off the bench. But I'm going to tell you a guy who I think is an X factor for the Celtics, and they're just a better team than these plays, Robert Williams. And what he brings on the defensive end and what he brings from a hustle standpoint to that team, to me, he's a difference maker on that ball club. And they are a better team when he's healthy. He's a tremendous athlete at their position. He's quick off the floor, tremendous leaping ability. And, yeah, he's a difference maker, particularly with offensive rebounds, alley hoops, and then what he brings to the table on the defensive end. And that's where the Celtics is winning this series right now. They're winning it on the defensive end. They're winning it with defensive transition into offensive points. And, I mean, they just they have those elite wings in there. That's the difference in this game, in this series so far.
Well, I'd have to agree with that. You know, that's who I picked to go to the finals as well out of the East. But so far, what have they done? They've won two games at home, right? So, you know, all you have to do is hold serve. That's all you want to do. If you get down, you know, we've seen it time and time again. Team goes up 2-0. They've won those games at home. That's how you get into these longer series, 6-7 games. So that's all you've got to do is one game at a time now. If you're Atlanta, they've got the talent to win that first game. If they win that first game, then anything can happen in that, you know, in that second game or whatever. So until they lose at home, of course, those odds and those numbers go just way down. So, but all they have to do is just win that first game at home, and then they can be in it. But, you know, Boston's a tough team. That's a bad matchup, you know. So
yeah.
I don't expect them to win, but I do expect them to win a game or two.
That's what I said, yeah. Just go down fighting, which I was happy about. They did at least put some fight and, you know, started out pretty hot and then kind of like just wore down. But good stuff. Nas, what you got on that, my guy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with what everybody said. Yeah, Robert Williams makes them so much faster just with how athletic he is and just how fast he is, kind of makes up for Al Horford's lack of foot speed now at this point in his career. And then Malcolm Brogdon, just having him as an extra, you know, energy guy and high scorer off the bench. Like, if things don't go well and you got to play that second unit and Brogdon and White are out there, man, they can make some things happen. And as far as the Hawks, I just think they're playing with house money. Quinn is evaluating this roster and seeing who he wants and who he doesn't want. Like, that's what's going on. Like, it's the unsaid about the Hawks right now. That team will not look like that like it does right now next year.
It will not. It will not. Man, I was clutching my eyes every time John Collins was shooting threes. Like, come on, bro. Why are you shooting threes, man? It just brought back bad memories of Josh Smith, man. So why are you shooting, man? You know, that's the worst guy to be shooting threes. I mean, he needed to go to the gym and shoot like 1,000 of those. That was just terrible. But that's just me. So, yeah. Rob, you want to recap the Knicks and the Cavs?
Yeah, you know, you look at game one in that series, you know, I was a little concerned for Cleavis, particularly with Darius Garland. He didn't really play well in game one. And Cleveland, the way they built, you know, with Jared Allen and Mobley, I mean, they're two elite bigs that are great athletes. They have to win with great defense, and they got to get offensive production from Donovan Mitchell and Garland. And you saw that tonight when they came back. They had the great defense from their bigs, and they got the explosive points from their guards. They did not get that in game one, where only Donovan Mitchell scoring up scoring. Darius Garland did not come to play in game one. And that's what makes them dangerous. Their guards have to score. They probably can use another reliable scorer. And LeVert gave that to them tonight, too. So, I mean, they need a third scorer in addition to Garland. But Garland has to play like an all-star for them to be successful, and they got that tonight, and they got the additional production from LeVert, and then allow Mobley and Jared Allen to do what they do best, right? Rebound, block shots, defend, and use their length, and they can get out on the open floor, their athletic bigs. So that's how they're built, and they play a lot better to the way they're structured to win on tonight, which didn't show up in game one against the Knicks. I still like the Cavs in this series, even though he lost one at home.
I was going to say, if you're the Knicks, we're used to making fun of them, but they did that one move at the trade deadline, getting Josh Hart, what was a really incredible move, you know, just a solid piece for them to come off. And he's been kind of like, he's kind of like their version of Robert Williams. He's just kind of all around, just great defender, great score. He does everything well, man. So you talk about a move that just definitely catapulted them. And like you said, we'll see if the Cavs can hold this off. But, you know, right now, like for the Knicks, you know, you're trying to, like you said, Gary, trying to hold serve, if you will, see if we can pull this off, man. So, but, you know, that was a good move picking up Josh Hart. It's crazy how one player has made such a huge difference for that squad.
Josh Hart is a heck of a player. He's a team player, hustle guy. He can score. I liked him with the Pelicans. I know we have to trade him to get C.J. McCollum. Yeah, heck of a ball player. He's a great piece to have on your team. And he's definitely a great piece for this Knicks team. And hey, this Knicks team put something together, right, with Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, R.J. Barrett.
Yeah.
And then having the guys, like you mentioned, to come off the bench like Hart. They're putting something together right now. And I think it's going to be a good series. I could definitely see this series going seven games. But I think I still like Cavs finding a way to win.
That's what I was going to say, too. I think it's a seven-game series, and I've got the Cavs winning it as well.
Anything else on that, Nash?
Yeah, I'm leaning towards the Cavs, but I'm still not so sure. Game one, the Cavs got surprised by how physical New York was and all the energy that they brought, the playoff intensity that kind of ratchets up, and they weren't really ready for it. This game, they blew their doors off. And just look at what Mitchell did. Mitchell decided, okay, I got to pick my spots better. I went off last game, but I got to pick my spot. So this game, he was a facilitator. He made sure Garland got off early and was hitting big shots. And then he got his, you know, as the game progressed. And I think that's the way they need to play, especially against the Knicks. And the Knicks are hobbled, though. Julius being a little banged up and Brooklyn being a little banged up. That's going to be a factor, too. So, I don't know. Like y'all said, though, the Knicks, New York being in the playoffs is a good thing. And, with, man, these games at the Garden are going to be something, man. But, yeah,
it's going to be like this.
Yes, sir.
Warriors, looks like Draymond Green has been suspended. He's been suspended one game. Without pay. Okay, yeah. All right.
Wow, breaking news coming from Dre.
Just literally popped on my little ESPN thing. So, man, craziness. Let's talk about we're going to switch over to the NBA really quickly. NFL. Right now, you hear that, right. So you talk about the Rams and they're just like open season here. another situation where it looks like they are trading Allen Robinson to the Steelers. There's a couple situations, and everyone's talking about the Rams getting fleeced here right now. So it appears right now, I don't know, Rob, if you have some, it looks like they're getting like a seventh-round pick, and they're taking back some of the compensation, if you will, here. So I'm looking up some details about that now, but it looks like right now the Steelers getting Allen Robinson is a really great pickup for.
What's going on here with that, if you don't mind, is they're just swapping seventh round picks.
Yeah.
The Rams are getting the 234th pick, and the Steelers are getting the 251st pick, and the Steelers are going to pay $5 million of his $10.25 million contract. So they kind of are getting fleeced, but they've got to try and get, you know, with the Rams, you know, they had that experiment a few years ago and it panned out. They got a championship and now they're in this situation where they've got to make these lousy moves. As far as I'm concerned with the Rams, I'd get rid of Cooper Kupp. I'd get rid of Aaron Donald. I would get whatever they could and just start over, because they're not going to be competitive. They're going to be barely better than Arizona, and Arizona is going to be one of the weakest teams in their division, but also in the NFC. And I think that's where the Rams are going to fall too.
They're going to pay $10 million of a salary too. Wow. Okay, and they're picking up $5 million. Wow. Well, that's a win. Dang.
And this is one of those trades where the Steelers are giving up very little, and so it's a low risk for them, but hoping for a high reward. Similar to the Falcons in the Jeff Okuda trade, right? You know, the Falcons don't have to give up a fifth-round pick. You know, they're taking a chance on Jeff Okuda, but they didn't have to give up much for him, right? So it's a low risk, high reward, and it's the same thing with the Steelers. They're hoping that they can get the Allen Robinson from 2020. But last year, Allen Robinson only caught like 30-something passes and 3 touchdowns, so not a lot of production. Only played in 10 games. And so the Steelers are, hey, all they had to do, as Gary mentioned, was swap 7-round picks. They gave up their 234th pick for the 251st pick. And, hey, you know, hey, it's, like I said, low risk, hoping for a high reward. This particular situation. So I don't see any fault with the Steelers are doing, taking the chance, just like I don't see any fault with the Falcons deal, taking the chance with Jeff Okuda.
Yeah.
Would you do with the Rams, Rob? I mean, I would sell all assets and just start over.
Well, you know,
I think what the Rams are doing is obviously they're trying to keep as many of their true impact players as possible in hope that they can get some young guys around that they can be competitive. The problem is they don't have a first-round pick in this draft. We don't know how well Stafford is going to be from a health perspective at the quarterback position either.
Right.
So, I mean, I can see your point, but to the head coach there, I mean, he's going to want to still be competitive and see what he can piece together. I think with Allen Robinson here, they're looking at it from the standpoint, hey, we're not getting a lot of production out of him. Let's see if we can get this salary off the books, right? And but, you know, they're still getting production from Cooper Kupp. They're still getting production from Aaron Donald. So I don't think those are two guys they want to just get rid of just yet. And I don't think those guys are asking to be traded either. So, you know, I look at Sean McVay. He wants to see what kind of team he can put on the field that can still be competitive. But I think they're looking at some of these high-priced guys that are not performing and saying, hey, let's just see if we can move them. So, yeah, if you had the great
Donald's experience, not the same guy he used to be. Cooper Kupp is that guy. And they need young. They need young players.
Mm-hmm.
They threw all their chips on the table for one season, as we've talked about, and now they're paying the price for it. McVay is a good coach. I would say let's start over.
Yeah, but that's the difficulty of it. Like, this falls in the lap of McVay. Like, this was his problem. He was willing to trade picks in a way that other organizations, somebody would have told you no. But nobody would have known. So now they're at the point where they have to make deals for money or picks, period. And, you know, you can say what you want about some of the top-tier talent, Donald and Kupp and everything else, but it doesn't matter if you have no depth across the board. You know, you look at both lines on that team. Like, this is just not a very good roster. So you got to figure out a way to finagle some picks and get younger at the same time while being competitive. So, yeah, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, they got a lot of problems, man, but they're self-inflicted. And if you ask them, I think they would say a championship was worth it. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Can't argue with that.
Well, we got about 8 minutes to talk about the prospects of the red flags. If you want to jump into the mock draft, Rob, then we may have to end the show on that. But go ahead with that.
Yeah, and I didn't get a chance to post the mock draft. I'll do it after the show. But here's five prospects here that some teams, you know, either really love or some teams have removed them off of their draft board. And I'll start with Jalen Carter, the situation that happened at the University of Georgia. You know, Jalen arguably could be the best player in this draft. I mean, that's how talented he is. That's how dominant he was. Even the first national championship 2 years ago when they won it, he was a sophomore. He was the best player in that defensive line as a sophomore. 2 years ago. I mean, that's just how good he is. I still have him going in the top five. I have him going number five to Seattle, my latest mock, but there could be some teams that have removed him off his board. I think Pete Carroll will be the kind of coach that would draft him, and it will have the personality to manage him. Stetson Bennett is another one that some teams are arguably possibly removed off their draft board. I have him going in the fourth round to Washington Commanders right now. As a backup to Sam Howell. So that's where I have him going. Brenton Cox, edge rusher from Florida. This is a guy started his college career at Georgia, ended his college career at Florida, got kicked off of two college football teams, tremendous athlete, 6'4", 250 pounds. I have the Saints taking a chance on him in the fifth round as an edge rusher. So another guy that, you know, possibly would have been a lot higher wasn't for the off-the-field concerns, right? But, you know, in the fifth round, you take a chance on a player like that. Low risk, high reward, as we just talked about with a couple of trades. Kayshon Boutte, I have him going in the second round to the Steelers. His not really off-the-field issues. His is more, you know, his performance dropped off considerably after an injury. And kind of was a little wishy-washy, you know, I'm not declaring for the draft, declaring for the draft. You know, a lot of questions regarding that.
and where he is from a mentality standpoint. And then the last one, Mazi Smith, defensive tackle from Michigan. I am going in the second round to the Jets right now. He's a guy that got arrested in October, turned out to be just a misdemeanor, was never suspended off the football team. Seems to be a situation where he's mostly have checked all the boxes, but it could be some teams that are still removing him off to the draft board. So those are just five players that, you know, we're going to be interesting to watch on a draft to see if these situations have hurt them tremendously come draft night. I'll go over the top 10 here really quick and then my latest mock, and then we'll talk about our three teams here. Still got C.J. Stroud going to Carolina at number one. That's becoming more and more evident, especially after hearing some of the comments the GM for Carolina made about Bryce Young. So I got Bryce Young going number two to Houston. I got a trade in this latest mock draft, but I haven't posted it yet. I got Indianapolis trading up to three to secure Anthony Richardson at the quarterback spot there. I think they'll get a little scared of another team coming in trading up to that three spot. So I got Indianapolis trading up to three. Arizona trading down to four, getting an extra draft pick, and still getting the guy they want, Will Anderson, edge rusher from Alabama. I talked about Jalen Carter going to Seattle at five already. Tyree Wilson, edge rusher, Texas Tech to Detroit, tremendous athlete. Christian Gonzalez, another tremendous athlete, probably the best corner in the draft. I got him going to Las Vegas at seven. For the second mock in a row, I got the Falcons taking Lucas Van Ness, edge rusher from Iowa. Tremendous athlete, great size. A lot of scouts think he could be the kind of player that the Watt brothers are, J.J. and C.J., and he's even got a lot more length than those guys do at 6'6". Paris Johnson, Jr., offensive tackle from Ohio State. Second straight mock, I got him going number nine in Chicago to give Justin Fields some more help. And Devin Witherspoon is a close second-best corner to Christian Gonzalez. Maybe knocking on his door being the best corner in the draft. Devin Witherspoon, cornerback from Illinois. I got him going 10 to Philly. Philly is getting a little old back there in the secondary. So I'll talk about the Falcons here. We talked about Luke Van Ness already. I got him taking Luke Weitler, interior offensive lineman in the second round, who can play guard center from Ohio State. He's got good versatility. Came into Ohio State as a tackle, so you can probably move him almost anywhere on the offensive line. In the third round, I got the Falcons taking Rakim Jarrett, 6-foot wide receiver from Maryland, 4.44 40 time. Could be a solid slot receiver for you. And then in the fourth round, I'm going to take a Moro Ojobo, three technique defensive tackle from Texas. This guy could be a real sleeper. He's got great quickness, just slightly under 300 pounds. In the fourth round from Texas, he could be a real sleeper. Nick Broeker, offensive tackle from Ole Miss. He can play guard as well. So I got the Falcons taking him in the fourth round as well. And then in the seventh round, Falcons got two picks. They don't have any fifth or sixth round picks. Cameron Mitchell, cornerback from Northwestern, 5'11", 197 pounds, 4'4", 740. And then also Keaton Mitchell, running back, East Carolina. He's only 5'8", 179 pounds, but he ran a 4'3", 740. This guy is extremely fast. Running back from East Carolina, and he's from the Atlanta area as well. So I got the Falcons taking him in the seventh round. I'll finish the rest of it in the OT portion, ladies and gentlemen. That's our end of our regularly scheduled program, our live portion of the show. You can get the rest of the show by clicking on the same link to get the rest of the show. Next week, we'll be back at you next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, East Coast, Boston, Philadelphia, New York. Y'all in the playoffs. Want to hear from y'all. Central Time Zone, Milwaukee, Memphis. Hey, y'all got some tough injuries right now with Giannis and John Morant. We want to hear from y'all, too. Mountain Time Zone, Denver look good. We want to hear from y'all, Denver. And then the West Coast, Phoenix, L.A., Sacramento, Oakland, San Fran. NBA playoffs are here. We want to hear from you guys and your team. Tune in next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. Good night, people. All right. I'll wrap up with the I'll wrap up with the mock draft. The Cowboys, I got them taking two mocks in a row. I got them taking Juwan Jones, offensive tackle from Ohio State in the first round. So I still got him slotted there. Huge offensive tackle, 6'7", with great length. You know, he's got great extension. It's hard to get around him on the offensive line. You know, he's a guy that's really climbing up draft boards. Keon White, and Andre can talk about him a little bit. They got the Cowboys picking him in the second round.
Great pick.
Edge rusher from Georgia Tech. Tremendous athlete, still a little raw, still learning the position, but has tremendous potential. Another guy that's climbing up draft boards as well. In the third round, I got the Cowboys taking Brandon Joseph, safety from Notre Dame. Cowboys still trying to reinforce that secondary. They've already made some moves and trades in the offseason. Brandon Joseph has got tremendous football IQ, 6 feet, one's a 2.62, 40 time. He did miss a lot of tackles this past year, probably why he dropped in the third round, but he's got great football instincts. In the fourth round, I got him taking Travis Hodges Tomlinson right in their backyard, cornerback from TCU in Fort Worth. He's a little small, but he could be a great addition to covering the slot. Tough football player. And then in the fifth round, I got the Cowboys drafting Jaren Hall, quarterback from BYU. Quarterback with some great versatility. Not sure how long they're going to be able to keep Cooper Rush there as a backup, but Jaren Hall, somebody that can develop as a backup for the future.
Oh, no, Cooper Rush.
And then in the sixth round, I got the Cowboys taking Elijah Higgins, wide receiver from Stanford. He's a big dude, 6'3", 235 pounds, almost could be a tight end. Runs a 4.54, be great in the red zone, great at running slots as well. And then in the seventh round, I got the Cowboys taking McClendon Curtis, offensive guard from the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. 6'6", 324 pounds, tremendous run blocker, solid in the pass blocking game. The only reason he goes late is because of the small school competition. But on film, the guy looks like a terror, taking a chance on him in the seventh round. And then last but not least, my Saints. We got us taking Zay Flowers, wide receiver from Boston College in the first round. Give Derek Carr another weapon. You know, you got Chris Olave and you got Rashid Shaheed. We don't know what we're going to get out of Michael Thomas. He hadn't played in about 15 years. So I don't think you can count on him. So I think you need to prepare as if he's not going to be there. You got to give Derek Carr another weapon there. So I got to stick with Zay Flowers. And if you get something out of Michael Thomas, that's laying yet. Jack Campbell, linebacker from Iowa in the second round, 6'5", versatile linebacker. DeMario Davis still playing at a high level, but he's 34 years old, right? So you got to start preparing. And then we lost Caden Ellis to the Falcons. So we got to get some more depth at the linebacker position. And Jack Campbell, we'll be able to provide that, and we'll be a future starter in this league. He'll play all three downs, too. So he can cover the pass, and he can stop the run. So he'll be a guy that's valued in this draft. In the third round, I got a Saints giving Derek Carr another weapon, tight end from Oregon State. He'll be one of the best pass-catching tight ends in this draft. This is a great year for tight ends in this draft. It's very deep. He's got a lot of good pass catchers and a lot of good blocking tight ends, too. So he will be another good weapon for Derek Carr as well. In the fourth round, Jaquelin Roy, defensive tackle from LSU. The Saints definitely going to need some more depth. They did sign a couple of defensive tackles in free agency. They signed Nathan Shepard, defensive starter from the Jets, and Quaylen Saunders, defensive tackle starter from the Chiefs. But I think we still need some more depth at that position. One of the best names in the draft in the fifth round,
Habaka.
Cool Blue Kelly, cornerback from Stanford. Another guy that would be a solid guy that can help be a backup in the league and help with special teams. I mentioned Brendan Cox Jr., the guy who'll be a low risk, maybe high reward kind of player with off the field issues. Saints taking him in the fifth round. Then the Saints got 2 7-round picks. Got us taking two safeties, Josh Proctor, safety from Ohio State,
and Tyreek Jones, safety from Boise State. Tyrann Mathieu actually had a great year for the Saints last year, but he's knocking on 30 as well, or maybe even already at 30. So you got to get some depth there at the safety position, and you draft two guys there in the seventh round. So that's where we are with the mock. I haven't posted it yet, but I will post it.
Gary, sounds good for you.
Good.
Anyone comment on that?
No. Good job.
Keon White, man. That's a good pickup. Juwan Jones, that dude, I thought he was like 6'8", Rob, you know, give or take an inch, 6'7", but that's a big dude, man. So yeah, that's a guy, man. Just put him on the right side or left side, man. No one getting around that guy, man. That dude is massive. Yeah. So,
and he's got quick feet, too, man. He's very nimble for his size, too.
Ooh, yeah. That's going to be a great pickup, man. I'm hoping
he's
we can trade down to center. I would just keep him asking picks. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and the only reason he's not going a little higher than where he is, you know, there's some concern about his run blocking, but pass protecting, he's phenomenal. I mean, yeah, the way he moves his feet and slides and his arm extension, yeah, his pass blocking is tremendous. But he'll need just a tad bit more coaching in the run game.
I mean, pass blocking is where it's at, I would say. I think it's easier to teach somebody to run block than pass block. That's just me.
Yeah.
So that's a good situation. But if I'm with that, I would like trade down. There's a couple of guys, Osiris Torrance from Florida. I'd like to pick him up. I like the pickup you put for us, you know, the center guard. You know, that's a good pickup too. Luke, you know, there's Steve Avila. There's another guy, John Michael Smith, center from Minnesota. I'd love to pick up Keon White, just keep him home. But I'm curious to see what, like you said, we're not sure what's going to happen, all these smoke screens that are going on right now. Nas, do you have anything to add to what Rob added to the Falcons or anything, any concerns? Your favorite boy, Anthony Richardson, favorite guy, excuse me, is going number three, which is, you know, that's going to drive JQ crazy. But there it is. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a little high for me, like we talked about last time. I was bringing him up when people were talking about second-round pick and all that stuff. But, yeah, once people start talking about number one to three, he's like, oh, this might be a little rich for my blood. But at the same time, though, with his talent profile, I mean, it's worth taking a shot on it. But the thing I was going to bring up, and great mock, as always, Rob, the thing I was going to bring up was Bijan Robinson. Look, I understand everybody doesn't want to take a running back in the first round. Let me sell you on it. What about 7 years of a prime player? If you draft a guy in the first round, that means you get the 4 plus the 1 year option. You franchise him 2 years, and as we all know, running backs, carries, and everything else adds up, and you let that person walk out the door. So if you get 7 years of elite running back play, the best years of that person – career, that first round pick doesn't sound so bad for a running back if that person is elite. Again, they have to be elite, and I think he's one of those.
I do too.
Yeah, he's an interesting prospect. I mean, he's definitely the best running back in this draft, right? If he can run it and he can catch it out of the backfield. And I've had him go as high as number 6 in some of these mocks, and I've had him go as low as number 30. I definitely think he's a first round pick. My latest mock, I got him going 27 to Buffalo. And what have we been saying about Buffalo for the last 3 to 4 years? They've been knocking on that door.
In the running game.
But Josh Allen has been their best running back, right? And right now I have him going 27 to Buffalo. If he makes it down to them, I mean, that could be just what the doctor ordered for the Buffalo Bills, right?
If he's if he's there with the Cowboys, Jerry Jones will take him.
Yeah, and the Cowboys
They're not keeping Jerry off the phone. Dude, if he's there, Jerry is taking that phone from Junior. It meant Jerry's going nuts in that war room. He's taking over, and they're getting him. If he falls, oh, God.
I don't think they're anticipating him going that low, but if he falls into their lap, I think that, you know, you're right. You get 7 years out of a running back like that. You can let him go.
Yeah, I've had him go as high as number 6 for Detroit,
And I can see the Eagles possibly considering him even at number 10. I mean, they just lost Miles Sanders to Carolina. So I can even see them even considering him too. So it's an interesting player. You know, like I said, I've had him in some of my mocks as high as number 6. In his latest mock, I got him going number 27. So it's definitely going to be really interesting to see where he falls.
That position, though, has been a little devalued, though, if you think about it, though, because you talk about it, it's you can get, like, great running backs if you're the Broncos are always getting running backs in the third round, right? And hell, even we got, you know, Tyler Ajir in our fifth round. So, you know, it's just unless the guy has something spectacular, it's hard to just, you know, I'm with you, he's an elite talent. But like you said, the mocks, they're all over the map with him, too. So it's like, how elite is this guy? Is he like a 4.2, you know, running like Chris Jones back in the day? Or, you know, it's just there's got to be something about this guy that makes him really, really special kind of be in that situation too. But I don't know. It's
strong, fast.
Awesome.
I like Jameer Gibbs, running back from Alabama.
It's going to make sense every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Rob. But it's only going to make sense every once in a while with certain prospects. Like the Saquon year, I had no problem with them drafting Saquon, but 2 was a little high. But I had no problem with them drafting him in the first round. And I look at Bijan the same way. Like, he's a special back. Will there be one next year? Probably not. Year after? Probably not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
I like Jahmyr Gibbs,
yeah, like
running back from Alabama, too. I think he's very versatile as well. I got him going the second round, 41, to Tennessee. I think they're finally trying to give what's the running back name in Tennessee?
Oh, Derrick Henry.
Derrick King Henry.
Derrick Henry. Yeah. How could I forget Derrick Henry, right? But I think they're trying to, you know, give him some more help and take some of the load off of him as well, all the wear and tear he's had over the years. So I got him going to Tennessee in number 41. So Jahmyr Gibbs is another running back to watch. Another running back I like is Zach Charbonnet from UCLA. I think he can be a real sleeper too. And I got him going in the third round in Houston right now. But yeah, that's another good running back to watch as well. Zach Evans from Ole Miss, another running back from Texas. Roshan Johnson, Kendre Miller from TCU. Tyjae Spears, Tulane. Yeah. So there's a lot of good value to running back position in the mid rounds, and that to me would be the only reason why Bijan Robinson could fall a little bit. But I definitely think he'll still be a first round pick.
But
there's a lot of good running backs.
Guys who you would put in a committee, though, those aren't three down backs who you're giving the franchise. You know, you're looking at as a franchise type guy. Like, think about it. Gibbs and Keandre Miller, they're probably the reason why Austin Eckler can't find a partner to make the trade happen, because everybody's like, well, why should I trade for Austin when I just draft these guys and it's the same profile, same thing? So I'm with you on that. Like, all of those guys are committee guys. If a guy is a bell cow, old school workhorse, that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep an eye on it, man. I mean, we talk about Zach. There's like, I agree with Rob, there's so many running backs. But like I said, it's what makes, you know, that guy unique in a position that's, you know, definitely losing a little bit of his value. But like you said, it depends on what's happening with the league. So, man, keep this seven game streak going. All right, gentlemen, have a great rest of the week. We are slowly counting down draft week. We're almost 2 weeks away from that. That's going to be amazing. I know we're going to be ready to talk about
really,
that.
Just a week and a half.
Next Thursday.
A week from Thursday.
Yeah, it's actually the 20. I'm not looking at the next Thursday. I'm looking at that correctly. Man, that's going to be amazing. Right around the corner here. So all of the smoke screens will be over and whatnot. So I'm sure we'll have some talk into that and a nice recap as well. But anything else to talk about from that? Gary, anything else to say on that?
Well, you know, you were talking about coaches on the hot seat. And the only thing, the only coach for me that came to mind was Cristobal.
I had him on a list, too. Interesting.
You know, watching him at Oregon and I'm watching him at my team, the U. He's a good recruiter. But I don't think his game day preparation is worth a shit. I don't think he gets his teams ready. And if I were University of Miami, I'd have been saying, you better put up or shut up. And he is one that's definitely on my, at least on my hot seat.
Yeah, interesting, Gary. I had him on the list.
He can recruit, can't coach.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
And there's too much talent down there in that South Florida corridor too. I definitely had him on the list. A couple other guys I had on the list was Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern, and I know not a lot is expected of you as a head coach at Northwestern. He's done a solid job, but he's got like 3 out of the last 4 years they've been 1-8 in Big Ten. So it'll be interesting if they finally try to find someone new there. Another Florida school, Billy Napier. I know he's only going to his second year of Florida, just like Mario Cristobal is going to his second year in Miami. But, I mean, those are just two schools that you're going to have a lot of talent. And for them to be very average programs right now, you got to wonder how long will they be able to survive if they continue at the rate that they are doing. Hey, Brent Venables, Oklahoma. Man, what a drop-off, right? Huge drop-off from Lincoln Riley. And so we'll see, you know, how that goes as well. And Steve Sarkisian, he's got Texas in the top 25 the last 2 years. But, you know, Texas wanted to be in the top 10. And so it'll be interesting to see how much, you know, longer they'll
They
want to
be in
that.
The conversation.
Yes, yes. And another surprising name I have in there is Jimbo Fisher. I mean, I do think they'll be better next year, but they underachieved big time last year with all the talent that they had on that roster. I want to say they finished 4-8, so that's, you know, very concerning for the amount of money that they're paying him. I think he's like the second highest paid coach in college football behind Nick Saban, and they're not getting what they're expecting out of him. So those are just some other names that I had, you know, on the list as well.
Yeah. And we got to add the school's profile to this. So Florida, they have the money. When things get a little shaky, the alums will run them out of there. The boosters, they'll get them gone. As far as Cristobal at Miami, the trouble is you give them that long contract with so much money in it, I don't think they can scrape enough change up to buy him out and go get another guy. Venables,
right.
We talked about this as soon as he took the job, where I said, that's not the guy. He's the coach now, the bridge coach, until they get a star down there, which they will do. A&M with Jimbo, they got some oil guys down there, man. You know Texas, man. Sarkisian, same thing. Even if you think you have some security down there, hey, they'll rally up a posse, man, and get you going.
Probably strong, poor guy.
But JQ says Steve Sarkisian is a better coach when he's drinking.
Yeah, he always talks about that. Let that man drink some more. Yeah, that dude, ever since he's been –
And now
that
JQ, now you got to bring that up.
Yeah. Messed up, too, but hilarious.
It's so true. We're
Kevin Sumlin when you need him.
Oh, man.
Got to hate the Lakers.
Can we bring up the Godfather, the Untouchable? Because like we said years ago, Alabama has a certain standard, and as great as Nick Saban has been, do we think we're on the brink of another Saban run, or is this the start of the decline? And the chatter gets louder and louder. And in 2 years or so, we see Saban either pushed up, you know, into some administrative role or something else. But tell you, man, Alabama is not like other schools. They will kill a legend. Like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, man. I think he's safe.
So I think he's safe. I think that he'll – you know, with that recruiting machine they have down there, you know, I mean, they get whoever they want.
They Saban's like the government, though. He didn't like competition. So when you start getting competition, he starts getting antsy. So keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, he's complaining about having to play Auburn and Tennessee every year. I'm like, come on, dude, you're in the SEC. You want to play, man, Western Kentucky and the Bowling Green?
Yeah.
Go join the Sun Belt Conference.
Why I got to play Auburn?
Said, if you think he won't put in a formal complaint against Kirby, because he will if he plays
right. That's what I'm saying. He's going to be like, man, Kirby cheating. Like, come on, what the hell? You're doing too many NIL deals over there. What are you doing over there, Saban? Shut the hell up, man. Leave us alone. But if Jordy keeps doing it, he's gonna get upset. He's going to make a complaint. Make up something. Just like Krzyzewski, same thing with.
Well, you know, they get so used to winning, and it sure is nice to see them lose, you know. It really is. Just the look on his face.
Anytime he looks salty, you know he's pissed, you know. But all good. All right, gentlemen. See you guys. It's been a good show. Appreciate you, Naj, for jumping on, as always. We'll have the full compliment done next week. Hopefully JQ will feel a lot better, and we will get the full squad back for sure. But have a great week. I know we're riding to NFL draft next week, so that's going to be amazing. We'll get that going. We'll see how many smoke screens are getting thrown up, and we'll get that'll be the prep for the week. So I know, Rob, you're going to post the your NFL mock. What is this, like, he's in, like, what, 10 of these now, it feels like?
I think it's way more than 10. I don't even know how many. But I'm going to post my recent one tonight, so I'll post that one. I'll be doing one more before the show next week, and then I'll be doing one more last minute before the actual draft. So two more mock drafts out of me before the draft next Thursday.
Just don't get fined like Mike Mayock, man, okay? Just, we don't want that, man. So it's all good, man.
Adam Silver is somewhere kicking and throwing up. He's got his premier event on, and the NFL draft is still just as strong as the NBA playoffs. That is a scary proposition, but that's where we are.
Yeah, players it is.
Yeah.
There was a quote that they were talking about, one of the players, I was listening to something, they were talking about how Pete Rozelle at the time was like, they were talking about how putting the NFL draft on television when it was first coming up, and then they're like, hey, you should put this on TV. And he's like, why the hell would you want to do that? And then you're like, next thing you know, perhaps it's just like you said, Naj, it's just as big. I'm going against an NBA champ.
Everybody want to know what the team did. Yeah.
Right. My dad and I, we watched, you know, the NFL draft for years. And it always frustrated my mom. She says, so these players aren't even with your team? Or how does this work? And we're like, well, hey, we're waiting to see who our team gets. You know, she was just freaked out. So it's not a game. You're not watching a game. You're not thinking, what are you doing? You're just watching a bunch of kids that want to play football.
I'm the ultimate draft nerd, man. I have notebooks. I have notes and all kind of stuff when I'm watching it and everything.
Back in the day, remember when there was a Saturday, Sunday, those were so cool. Like, you know, you knew, like, hey, just leave me alone. Marcy, you know, I just have all my stuff. I would have all the magazines. You're just, like, locked in the whole 2 weekends. Like, you know, getting all this stuff. That was the fun part. Now it's kind of like, it's messed up how it's, like, Thursday, Friday. You know, I kind of hate it's kind of split up, but it was great on 2 days. So you're, like, just all day just watching the draft. Saturday, getting up at, like, in the morning, like, I'm going to watch this draft for all hours. And then you're, like, recapping it. And then Sunday – starts back up again.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of miss those.
I kind of like the format now because it doesn't take your whole weekend. So I like the Thursday and Friday night and then the Saturday during the day. So it's kind of cool.
You can make
Saturday night and Sunday.
Minnesota's representative because they keep missing stuff. But like I said, I missed the end of that. You know, obviously being a DJ, you know, missing that was, you know, crazy because before I'd miss all. I'm like, man, you booked me during draft weekend. That was kind of sucky. But, you know, at least you get that early on Thursday. So it's good now. So, yeah, all good. Yep. All right, gentlemen. We definitely used the best part of this OC portion. So see you guys same time, same channel next week, and we'll get prepared for the draft and all that fun stuff. Be good, guys.